Engineering Department. I'm going to present today some joint work with Professor Chi-Gun Lee, who is also my supervisor. The title today is The Marketing of Innovative Products with Word-of-Mouth Modeling and Adoption Network Effects. So, as an overview of what I'll be talking about today, I'll start off with an introduction. We'll discuss the motivation behind the model that I'll be presenting today, and just really briefly give you some relevant literature without going into too many details. We'll then go on to the model itself, and this model actually is a collection of sub-models. I would say that there's two main levels, and at the macro level, I call it the macro level, there's a diffusion process going on. I'll give you details about that. Then there's a micro level, adoption level, and there's also some word-of-mouth modeling going on as well, so we'll look at the details of those. We'll then go on to some numerical results. I have two sets of data that I've been using, some TV, color TV data from Canada, and some hybrid electric vehicle data that is actually from a survey that's been just given out not too long ago. Then I'll just conclude it with some future work and a conclusion. So, introduction. We'll start with the motivation. So, throughout history, there have definitely been examples of innovations that have this, for some reason, let's call it this time, were incredibly successful. Of course, on the flip side, there are probably more examples that we can deem as incredible failures. A classic example of a failure, which is pictured here, is Ford's Edsel model. And if you actually look up Edsel in Webster's dictionary, the first definition is obviously an automobile produced between 1957 and 1959 by the Ford Motor Company. Makes sense. But interestingly, the second definition, and this is in Webster's, is a product, project, etc., that fails to gain public acceptance despite high expectations, costly promotional efforts, and etc. So this was a classic example of a failure. Now, new product development typically involves large financial commitments. You can imagine the amount of money and time and effort that went into actually producing that car for Ford was a big deal. But with any large risk, if successful, it can spur greater growth and sales for a firm. So launching an innovative product can be an extremely risky investment. So what we try to do here is present a word-of-mouth diffusion model that aims to shed some light on market conditions and provide a tool to aid in the planning of the launch of a new innovation. This model is able to capture the process by which customers become aware of a new technology via a diffusion function and the adoption decision at the micro level, and we'll look at these in detail. I'm not going to go through the details of the significant papers, but I list three here. The Boss paper there up at the top from 1969 is kind of the first introduction, really, of this idea of using a diffusion process to describe how people adopt innovations that are brought out to market. Robinson Urban, they used some discrete choice modeling, so instead of using a diffusion process, discrete choice modeling to model this process as well. And then Anderson's paper down there at the bottom, I've included it because it was a really great paper that describes this word of mouth. And my kind of work kind of looked at all three of these and kind of puts it together in a way that we can really try and explain what happens when a firm does decide to put a new product to market. So I've been talking about the model. Let's start looking at it. So our model utilizes, as I mentioned, a two-stage adoption process. We have stage one, where a person becomes aware of a product. So if I were to introduce something extremely brand new technologies to market, eventually people need to become aware before they can even be purchasers. And what I mean by an aware customer, it's not that just you've heard of this product, but you're actually an active receiver and analyzer of information. So maybe you're going onto blogs, you're talking to friends, you're trying to understand really how this product can benefit me. Once you are an aware customer, then you can potentially move to stage two, and you can actually become an adopter. And as an adopter, not only are you an owner of this product, but you're actually a source of information as well. So if I own an iPhone, I can actually, you know, tell other people my experiences about my iPhone and post blogs or whatnot. Okay, so let's start at, let's say, the macro level. So the process in which people can become aware. Well, before we do that, let's look at Boss's traditional, what's referred to as the Boss model, and it's a diffusion process, the diffusion model here, which he proposed in 1969. This NP, and first you'll notice that it is a differential equation, and this capital NP is the cumulative number of people who are aware at time t. Given we have a fixed market size of size n. There are two parameters here. We have the external influence, often referred to as the parameter of innovation, and you can think of this as maybe as advertising or people talking about it in the media. You're hearing about this product through some external form. Whereas the other parameter there, B, is the internal influence and is referred to as the parameter of innovation. So you're hearing about this product from other people who also know about it as well. Now, if you solve that differential equation, there is an analytical solution to it. I'm not going to go through it, but that is the solution to that differential equation at time t. So if you solve it and you were to graph given parameters, given a particular market, you'll get what's referred to as an S-curve. So this S-curve will describe the way that this product is becoming aware throughout the market. So early on, you know, very few people are hearing about it, then all of a sudden, you know, it's really catching on and eventually starts to saturate the market. And remember, we're only talking about awareness here. So that's the Boss model. How do we utilize this very traditional model? Well, again, at the awareness level, we're incorporating a differential equation that looks very, very similar to Boss's model, but we're adding an extra term here. And because we're also including not only awareness, but people who have adopted it, you know, you don't only have to learn about a product from other people who are aware, you can hear about the product from people who have purchased it. And this is a very simple extension to it. So we've added a C parameter there, multiplied by VT, which is the cumulative number of people who are aware at time T. So just to kind of give a graphic of what's going on here, imagine we have the circle, which defines our market. The dots in there are potential customers. The red dot is, you know, at time zero, this is someone who is aware of the product. As we continue through time, through internal influence, you know, that person can talk to other people and, you know, more and more people are becoming aware within the market through internal influences. We have external influence as well. So, you know, they're not really talking to anyone, but for stuff that they hear over the radio or television, they become aware as well. And at some point in time, some of those people, so I had, you know, one red dot and one green dot, turned to purple dots there. These people actually decided to adopt. And now they can obviously make more people aware as well. So the question now becomes, how do we solve this new differential equation? The only thing I've really done is added that V term. It shouldn't be that difficult. But depending on how you model VT, solving this differential equation can actually be very, very, very difficult. So what we do is we assume that, at time t, VT is actually a constant. So as I'm about to solve this differential equation, I assume that I know the number of people who have purchased so far. So if I assume that VT is a constant, I can solve this differential equation. And the way that we do that is just through some simple manipulation. You know, I just expand the V out, collect the like terms, and you'll see that if I collect the V's and I call that A prime, so what I've circled there in the squiggly bracket, I call that A prime, and I just replace it by A prime down at the bottom line, you notice that looks exactly like the Boss diffusion model. So I can just use the solution to that differential equation to get that. You'll also, I add a little note down there at the bottom. For this to really kind of make sense, with your parameters, C would have to be greater than B. You wouldn't want definitely B to be greater, otherwise, you know, B could actually be decreasing the number of people who are becoming aware. Okay, so the question now becomes, how do we model the customer adoption process? So how do we get this VT at time T? And to do that, now we were at the macro level. We're going to jump down to what I refer to as the micro level, which models the adoption process. And here we're utilizing random utility theory. And how we define the random utility function is really important. What we do here is we include a risk-adjusted, forward-looking utility function that takes into account three attributes. And the three attributes that we're looking at is the perceived value of technology. So if I'm going to buy an iPhone, I believe it has some new technology, and I'm, as a customer, I'm going to try and have an understanding of what that value of technology is to me. The second attribute is network effect. It's often referred to as herding as well. And what this takes into account is if I'm the only one that's going to be buying an iPhone, that's not so great. But as more and more people join me in buying an iPhone, you know, this product is taking off. The likelihood that Apple is going to discontinue an iPhone becomes greater as more people purchase it. I get more utility as more people join me. So we're going to model that as well. And then the third attribute, which is often the most important, is the price of the technology. Okay, so let's, before we start looking at the details of each of the utility functions, I just have there, we're going to be dealing with expected utility. We're going to have some weight. So KX is the weight of the utility of the value of the technology. KV is the weight put towards the utility of herding. And KP is the utility of price. For increasing its price, I have a negative sign here. It's going to decrease your utility, obviously, as price increases. Okay, so we're going to be looking now at the utility of the value of the technology. And this work was actually inspired by, I mentioned there, Roberts and Urban, Roberts' dissertation from 1988, actually. And what we do here is we assume that the perceived value of technology is normally distributed. Going back to the iPhone example, I believe that it has a value and is normally distributed with some mean and variance. To model the actual utility function, we use the exponential utility model, and the expected risk adjustment utility is given down at the bottom here. I'm not going to go over the details of deriving that, but if you integrate between negative infinity with positive infinity for, you know, X being the value of the technology, you can actually simplify the utility function to get the following, where mu hat would be the mean perceived value of the technology at time t, and this would be the variance here. The sigma squared epsilon would be kind of the variance in the product itself. So we assume that every iPhone, for example, won't be exactly the same. Maybe some have defects or whatnot, and we try to include that into the customer experience as well. Okay, so that was how we model the utility of the value of the technology. We're also looking at herding as well, or the network effect. And to model the utility of that, we use something referred to as the Gompertz function, which I provide there. So it'll be a function of VT, the cumulative number of people who have adopted as well. And remember, I mentioned that my utility increases as more people adopt the product. The Gompertz function is a well-known growth function. It's used to simulate curves of limited growth. I usually have a slide that has a bunch of examples, but I think I'm tight for time, so I decided not to include it. Assuming now we have these customers who are valuing technology and valuing herding, what we do here is we have this omega, which is an index variable, and it's a random variable between 0 and 1. The distribution that we use for this random variable is the beta distribution, which is given down here at the bottom. It has parameters alpha and beta, which describe its shape. And how we use this omega is that customers that are indexed by higher values of omega, so remember higher values closer to 1, put more utility weighting towards the value of the technology. Whereas on the other side, If they have a lower value of omega, this represents customers that weigh the herding factor more. So it's a way for us to describe the randomness within the market itself, whether people are, you know, actually really worried about are more people. So you can kind of think about it in regards to the value of the technology. If this really is innovative, you know, maybe I want to, you know, the value of the technology is quite high. I don't really care if a lot of people are, you know, adopting it as well. I want to be one of the first ones to have an iPhone or whatnot. These graphs here kind of show that. The red curve there, this is just the beta distribution, you know, for this random index omega. The red curve there describes markets where people will likely put more weight towards the herding, whereas blue would put more weight towards technology. And we look at situations of both. Going back now to the third attribute of the utility function that we're looking at, is price. We just use the exponential utility function for price as well. I'm not going to go into details, but that's it right there. Okay, so where things start getting a little bit complicated is when we start putting everything together. So what we're doing here is we're looking at the expected utility at time t. And remember, it has three attributes, and I apologize, I used math type, and I hate when you start hitting enter on the, and you have like the brackets. This is all one line, and it's summed within the squiggly bracket. Okay, so the first term there is utility value of the technology. The second is utility of herding. And the third is the utility of price. We're multiplying by their weights there. And you'll see the weights are a little bit more complicated than just the Kx, Kv, or Kp that I had showed in an earlier slide. And this is because we're taking into account the randomness of whether people are putting more weight towards the value of the technology or the herding that we have here. And remember, we had omega, which was the random variable, and we integrate over all possible values of omega for a particular Bayes distribution. So we have parameters alpha and beta, and we get the expected utility. This delta k here is defined as 1 minus kp. So I assume that I know the weight that people are going to be putting towards the price. So whatever is remaining in the weight, because the sum of the weights need to add up to 1, will be, you know, the amount that's put towards the value of technology. And remember, the higher omega is, the more weight they're actually putting towards this term. Okay, so that's how we're calculating expected utility for a particular product. Integrate overall values of omega. How do we actually use this now to model the number of people who are going to be purchasing at time t? Well, we use the logit formulation, which is used quite a bit in this work and a lot of work in which you're trying to model discrete choice. But what we're a little interesting kind of twist that we've added here is, so those of you who aren't familiar with the logit formulation, you'll have e to the utility up in the numerator there, and then down in the denominator you have all the alternatives that you have for you. What I'm doing is not only looking at the utility of the product that you're considering buying and an alternative, which is C down here at the bottom, but you're also going to be weighing the decision that you have of, am I going to purchase today given price today and the number of people who purchased today, or can I maybe delay my purchase tomorrow or W time steps into the future? Because I assume that the customers are my office. They're not doing any strategic game planning, but they do know that the price is likely to decrease in the future and the number of people who are purchasing are likely to increase. So I want to at least kind of model that in what we're doing today. The C that I have explained down here at the bottom, I look at two different cases of the logit formulation. I assume just a constant alternative utility, so it's assuming that that value is U naught, and you can put that towards something else. Or I also look at utility of the alternative could be just the utility of price. So let's say you're buying a car or something. I could either spend $20,000 to buy a new car, or that $20,000 has utility UP to me, and I can use that money for anything that I really want to do. Now, to calculate the number of people who are going to purchase at time t, I multiply this probability, that should be a dot, not a square right there, times n would be the number of people who are aware at time t. So out of the awareness segment, I'm taking a proportion of them, and they're actually becoming adopters. Now, I had mentioned that once you are an adopter, not only are you an owner of the product, but you then become a source of information about this product as well. So I'm going to hopefully not take too much time and actually discuss how we model the word of mouth process. This process depends on two factors. So if I did purchase a product, what are going to be the things that influence not only what I say, but the likeliness that I say it? And what we take into account here is the experience that I have with the product, and we have ways of, you know, modeling this experience, and the characteristics of the communication channels within the society itself. So are we dealing with a society that, you know, has a lot of people using the internet, smartphones, blogs, all this great stuff, where you can actually spread information quite quickly? So the first step in this word of mouth model is we need to look at, given a segment of people who have purchased this product at time t, what is the expected number of people who are actually going to give a report? Because not everyone's going to give a report, only a small group of them. And we denote that value by y, and it's equal to what's given right here. And this lambda value is a number between 0 and 1. I'm not going to go into the details of it, but this value looks at the experiences that people have with the product. If I go into my purchase with very high expectations and I end up realizing that the product isn't as good as I thought, then I might be quite disappointed with it. And the more disappointed I am, or the more happy I am, the more likely I am to give a report, and so Y will increase. It'll be closer to 1. The gamma value is kind of a scalar value that models the communication channels within the community. So a community that's very likely to spread information amongst one another will have a higher value. At the minimum value, could just be equal to 1, and you're just taking some proportion of the number of people who have adopted, and that will be the number of people, the expected number of people who will give a report. So we have a number of people who will give a report. What actually is it that they're going to be reporting to other people who are aware of the product? Well, we denote the report that they're giving by X bar, and these subscripts G and H just take into account the time at which they became aware and the time at which they purchased. I'm not getting into the details of it, but it is important for me to keep track of when they became aware and when they purchased. Because of my perception of the product can change over time, and depending on my perception when I purchased it, it's going to affect the report that I give. And what I assume is that they're going to report the true value, the mean true value of the product. So I assume that the true value is normally distributed as well, with mean mu, and so they do know the true value, but they're going to have some bias. And the expected bias looks at the normal distribution of the perceived value, the normal distribution of the true value, and this W function that I just have here is a function that we choose quite carefully that we were able to fit through empirical data that kind of models as the difference between the perceived value and true value increases, the more likely they are to be biased. And depending on the signs, the bias can either be positive or negative. And to really give you just a shortcut answer, if I perceived the value to be lower than the true value when I actually purchased it, so I had low expectations, I purchased an iPhone and it actually turned out being a lot greater than what I thought it was, then my bias would be positive. Whereas if I thought too much about the product and then it ends up being less than what I expected, you'll have a negative bias. There's also some variance associated with the report, and this is how we calculate the variance. So you have the mean of the report given and the variance associated with it as well. So going back to that graphic that I just showed you, I explained to you that we have this diffusion process that describes the awareness through internal and external influences. And then at some point in time, some of those people can actually switch over to adopters through the logic formulation. Their utility was high enough for them to actually decide to go out and purchase it. Now, if we choose one of those adopters and they want to give a report, what's the likelihood that if this person just kind of puts out a report onto the internet or out into the abyss of this community, that one of these aware people will actually read or hear what this person has to say? And the way that we model that is through, we assume that there's a bunch of Bernoulli trials. And through the Bernoulli trials, we can actually say that it's binomially distributed. So if a segment was going to give a total of Y expected report, we can look at the likelihood that they'll give. If we can successfully match an adopter with one of the other aware customers 0 times, 1 time, 2 times, up to Y times, and then the question becomes, well, what's the likelihood that that could happen? What would be the p-value? Well, it would be the number of people who are aware in that particular segment over all of the people in the potential market minus one, because I've selected one adopter and then there's n minus one people remaining in the marketplace. Q is obviously one minus p. Okay, so given now this information that's being broadcast within the community, how do we actually then use, how does a person who is aware of the product use this information to actually, what do they actually do with it? Well, they update their perceived value of the product, and we do this via a Bayesian update. And what we need to do, because this information can come from a number of different segments within the total population, what we do is we sum up over the reports coming from 10th time reporter adopted. This person can adopt at time g equals to 0 up to time t. We also need to take into account when that reporter actually became aware. So the segment of people of when they became aware, the segment of people when they became adopters. Then we start summing up over the total number of reports that could be coming from these particular segments. This would be the total likelihood that that could happen. And then what we start doing is, so that's the likelihood of a successful communication, and this would be kind of like the expected updated, so the C plus one mean perceived value of the technology. Within this Bayesian update, we have the past belief, which was mu hat at time t. So note that we're looking at C plus one. We use the past belief. We have the X bar there, which is the new information, the report that's coming. And you see that we'll take like a proportion of the two. The weight put towards the past belief is that tau value. And tau is actually a ratio between the variance of the report and the variance of my past belief. So the way you can kind of think about this is, as the variance of the new information increases, tau will increase, which means I put more weight towards my past belief. And that makes sense. Whereas, you know, if there was a lot of variance associated with my past belief, you know, maybe I could put more weight towards this new information that I'm getting. The variance is updated in a similar way, given by this formulation right here. Okay, so I prepared a little graphic that kind of now just shows what's going on in the entire model. So again, we have the potential market with fixed size M here. And let's look at time equals to 0. And let's say that two people were aware at time equals to 0. So they had some information, insider information or whatnot. They knew before the product was even released that this product would be released. And this is the mean perceived value that they have for this product at time 0. Time is now equal to 1. This index is just keeping track of what time we're actually at. Because there's no information within the system, mu hat 0 is actually equal to mu hat 1 as well. But at time equal to 1, more people can become aware. Someone can adopt. So this person who was in the aware group has now entered the adopted group. And because they had mu hat 1, 0, they now have report x bar 1, 0. And at time equal to 2, they can actually communicate this information back to the aware customers. These aware customers will now update their beliefs. And so now we have mu hat 2, mu hat 2, 1. Given this information, the process continues. More people can become aware. More people can adopt. And we have to remember to keep track of when they became aware, because these people have different perceived values for the product. They're going to have different reports, even though they both, like all three of these individuals adopted at time 2, they became aware at different times, so they have different reports that they're going to give back to the remaining people in the aware group. So that was the model and the motivation behind it. The trick now becomes, how do we fit this model? Because you'll notice that there were a number of parameters. And how do we actually use it? So because of the tricky nature of the model, we use something referred to as response surface methodology, or RSM, to fit the model. And there's a great textbook by Myers and Montgomery. I believe their latest edition is from 2009 that really goes through this technique in great detail. And we employed it to fit our model. And I had mentioned to you that we looked at two sets of data. The first set was the Canadian color TV sales data from 68 to 79. And you'll think, well, why are we trying to fit such old data? Well, it was because we wanted to go through the entire life cycle. We didn't want to fit something that was just brand new and we couldn't see the full cycle, and because we really wanted to show the potential of the model. We also had some U.S. hybrid data as well. This is from 2004 to 2009 monthly. And we also have some survey data that we've been using to try and fit some of the utility parameters that exist within the model. I'm not going to try and take too much longer, but I'll just go through some of our results. There are four major cases. I looked at no herding cases with different alternatives within the logic formulation, or including herding as well. We also looked at, so when I was using RSM to fit, I could fit using all of the data that I have, so I'm just using all the data to fit the parameter, or I can use only a subset of the data that I have, and so kind of simulating forecasting. So I'm not using all of the data and then forecasting into the future. I'm using only a partial amount of the data. I'm using that model that I get from only partial data, and then I'm forecasting for the remainder part, and then I'm comparing with the actual data to actually see how good the fit was. And then we also do some two-way sensitivity analysis as well. This is kind of work that's still a little bit in progress, but this is some of the graphs that we're getting. So using the TV data, I'm actually able to fit quite well, and R-squared of quite almost equal to 1, which is could be hard to believe, but this is actually results that we're getting using all the possible data. The next question becomes, well, what if we want to use this for forecasting? So this is the TV data. So we do have a full set. The black curve that I have there would be the starting point. So I need to, in RSM, choose a starting solution. And then the different curves that I have here, the red, green, and the cyan, unfortunately, they're kind of all overlapped over the blue curve as well, which is the real data. The cyan, only takes 3 data points. So if we only take this amount of the curve and then forecast into the future, how well can we actually predict the blue curve, which is hidden underneath all of them? Because they're all kind of overlapping, you can kind of say to yourself, well, the fits are pretty good. The R-squared validates that. If we look at some herding cases, again, we're able to get some good fits. I'm not going to go through the details, but we're doing similar things here as well. Looking at the HEV data, so this is hybrid electric vehicles, we've got some interesting results here. So this is the forecasting graph. Again, the black are the starting values that we use for RSM, and then the blue, the blue is the actual sales data that we have for HEVs. Remember, this is up to 2009. The green and the red are two different trials using that. This is for using 1 year worth of data. So if we limit ourselves to 1 year, and then we forecast forward how well we can fit. And you'll notice this is for T equals to 30, so 30 months. Given 30 months, you'll notice that we're able to fit really, really well, you know, that first part of the curve. But then there's something going on there that we're not able to actually capture, like this little change. And if you actually look back, it's interesting to note that this does correspond with the summer 2008, which I guess you could say is the beginning of the financial crisis. So something was going on possibly within the market, within the U.S., where people actually weren't going out and buying hybrid vehicles or cars in general, for that matter. Whereas, you know, for some reason, like here, even though you're using less data, because you're less trying to fit exactly here over the long term, it would be interesting to see which one would actually be better. But on this idea of better, future work, what I'm actually working on right now to help kind of improve the fitting and the predictive value of the model is looking at the robustness of solutions. So best case versus worst case, or the sensitivity of the model to different solutions to the parameters, would be just looking at the empirical usage of this model. A little thing that I've started and is going to be on my, is on the back burner right now, but I'm looking to do as well as some game theory work. You can kind of imagine now if you can do a game between the firm and customers, or even two different firms who are going to be putting competing products into the marketplace. There is some work in this area, and I've been able to change my model enough to make it simple enough that I can actually go through and try and look at some equilibrium points within like these little game situations that I'm creating. Thank you guys for bearing with me on this Saturday evening. I hope you all enjoyed yourselves here today. It seems that we're the only kind of guys left, plus Matt, who was one of my students in a class that I'm not sure, so thanks Matt for sticking around. If there's any questions at this time, I'll be happy to answer them. Yeah. You, please, yes. Yes, of course, this one right here? This one right here.
Yeah, I think the very interesting thing is that you can take a solution with value.
Yeah, definitely.
I find that the curve, for example, the bigger data was the red curve and the green curve, it seems they're almost the same.
Yes, definitely. I actually do have some really great sensitivity figures that I have that kind of look at this. I didn't include them because I wasn't sure how tight we were going to be with time today. But I've actually found that good solutions can actually be found within neighbors of one another, and there's actually a relationship between them. So if I look at two-way sensitivity analysis, so two parameters at a time, and I pick everything else, there's actually a relationship between those two parameters where good fits can actually be found if I do particular trade-offs. So if I increase one parameter, you know, the other parameter needs to decrease by a certain amount or whatever, which can be good and bad if you're a firm. It means that you kind of have flexibility within the marketplace. It can also mean that, you know, there's a lot of things going on here that even though you're trying to predict forward using this model, you know, if all these parameters are kind of like mishmashed, you know, how well can we actually predict forward and stuff. So we're looking at all this stuff right now, to make a long story short, but I definitely agree with you, it's important to do. Yeah, yeah.
How does those parameters differ between the cars and the TVs?
Oh, quite differently, actually. Some of them were overlap, things on like value of money and things like that. Even though we're talking about two different time periods, it was unfortunately very difficult for me to get a lot of the parameters that I would have needed from like 1968 and stuff. So in that case, we made some assumptions of saying, like, you know, can maybe assume maybe like interest rates and things we could get. But in regards to one of the really important parameters is the size of the marketplace and the initial number of people who are aware. These are two parameters that, you know, if you kind of set these incorrectly at the beginning, the diffusion process uses those parameters, and if the number of people who are becoming aware, you can't predict that well, and then at the bottom level, the people who are adopting from it, you know, everything depends on those. What's interesting, for the TV data, the MNOC in that case, which is the initial number of people who are aware, was quite high. And actually, if you go back and look at some literature on that data, there's belief that in Canada, we actually received color TVs a lot later than they did in the States. And because we get a lot of media from the States, a lot of people were actually aware of the product before they could actually purchase it. And this whole idea of the value of the technology was really important for them. And it was interesting to see that our data kind of, our fittings actually showed that, validated this thought that the end knot was quite large. So, yeah. Anything else, gentlemen?